Good morning. It is time to get up with Zion. Just how important is it that he be included in the NBA's return? That answer may surprise you. Then the time has come to pay the piper, or at least the best player in the league. How much is too much? Once and for all, they decide now. And then the coach speaks about what his draft means to his legendary quarterback. I'll tell you why history tells a completely different story. All that and more as we get up with you on a Friday from Bristol. I'm Mike Greenberg and delighted you've chosen to get up with us as we head into the weekend on what will be a football Friday in many ways with a lot of NFL stories to get to today and the NBA continuing to work its way toward a return. Let's get up and go. Big news out there, and it starts with the NFL owners. They tabled a proposal yesterday that would have given teams a 4th-and-15 alternative to the onside kick. Teams that have attempted the expected onside kick are 0-104 over the past two seasons, according to NFL data. I was rooting for that one. Meanwhile, with the 2020 minor league baseball season likely to be canceled, hundreds of minor league players were cut Thursday, and hundreds more are expected to lose their jobs. Minor league teams had already begun laying off front office and game day workers in recent weeks. Elsewhere, the Boston Marathon canceled for the first time in the 124-year history of the event. The race had originally been scheduled for April 20th before being postponed for 5 months because of the coronavirus pandemic, and now it will not be run. And Chase Elliott took home his elusive first Cup victory of the season in a rain-delayed race at Charlotte last night. Elliott had suffered two frustrating losses in NASCAR's three prior Cup races since the series resumed on May 17th. And then to the NBA, where the Board of Governors is set to meet today after Adam Silver held a call with general managers yesterday. Milwaukee Bucks owner Mark Lazary gave CNBC an idea of what to expect to come out of today's meeting.
I think as the board we'll think about it and over the weekend, and then hopefully have another meeting early next week to vote on sort of what we all feel will be the reopening of the NBA. Look, I think at the end of the day, we'll be in Orlando at Disney, and the question is going to be, will we have all 30 teams there? Will we have 24? Whatever the number will end up being. But I think hopefully by the middle of July, we start playing again.
All right, always a lot of questions, but we're starting to get closer to the answers, and here's a man who has a bunch of them, is our Brian Windhorst. Wendy, what are you hearing about yesterday's call between Adam Silver and the GMs?
Well, the general managers, it's just funny talking to them after it's over. A lot of them think that Adam Silver doesn't really care what their viewpoints are because they all vote for self-interest. He took a survey amongst them about their preference, and the results, from what I am told, were all over the board. There was no consensus in the survey, and whether Adam Silver uses it in one iota, only Adam knows. The thing about the GMs is they're all going to have transparent motives. If you're sitting in first place, if you're Mark Lazary in the Milwaukee Bucks you just heard from, you don't want any sort of play-in tournament or any sort of group phase. Let's just go to the playoffs. We'll play 1-8. Let's go. We'll play Orlando. Let me know when the game is. If you're in 9th or 10th place, you want a play-in tournament. If you're in dead last place and your players are injured like Golden State, you don't want to play at all. So the difficulty when you ask for a consensus with people involved is you're never going to get it. And that's kind of what came out of yesterday.
I get it. And it makes sense. And someone has got to be in charge of what is for the greater good. And that's Adam Silver's job. And we'll see what he decides to do. So moving on to the potential playoff plans. You recently had a very interesting comment on your podcast about a scenario and a team and a player that we are all looking to get in.
Yeah. So one of the things I've been hearing as I've talked to people in the league is the league is going to set up this playoff plan to make sure Zion Williamson is involved. Now, I have to tell you, Greeny, that paranoia is at the top of the list with anything in the NBA. This is the course of my 18 years covering the league. They're always paranoid about everything. The league is screwing me, and they're helping that guy. And in this case, there's a number of different reasons why the league would want to have 20 or 24 teams, a number of different reasons to get extra games. But most of those scenarios include making sure that, having Zion Williamson in the postseason. And I think it's important to point out, this is not just the teams, in 7th or 8th place. If you look at the Western Conference, the difference between the number 4 seed Utah Jazz and the number 7 seed Dallas Mavericks is one victory. They're very tightly packed too. And it's not just a matter of getting in. They don't want to have to win their way back in after they've played, they felt like they played 65 games to get in position. And when you look at some of these proposals, it basically involves adding extra West teams and making sure the 10th place, or including at least the 10th place New Orleans Pelicans. And my feeling on this, I just laugh. Number one, I want to see Zion Williamson. So I just say, you know, whatever, I'd like to see it. Number two, like, you hear all the time, oh, they're taking care of the big markets. They want to take care of the Lakers. They want to take care of the Knicks. This is an accusation, or a concern at least, that they want to take care of the New Orleans Pelicans. That tells you, you know, where the league is in terms of paranoia.
I'm with you. And look, I want to say here that there's a fine line between maintaining the integrity of competition and putting on an entertaining show, which is ultimately what their job is. It's what their business is in the NBA, and maybe now more than any other time. So if there is some consideration given to that, if there's going to be criticism of it, you're not going to hear it here. All right, one more thing. How do you think they should handle these playoffs as far as how they will ultimately, because the competition at the end of the day is what it's about, how will they ultimately put that together? What's the right way?
Look, I think we cannot lose sight here that the reason we're going through all this is for health and safety. And the safest, cleanest, cheapest, because this is going to cost a lot of money to a lot of teams, is to play with the 16 teams in the bubble. The fewest amount of people in the bubble for the least amount of time is the way to go about this if that's your number one priority. But Adam Silver has 30,000 priorities sitting on his shoulders all day long. And if it comes out where there's 20 teams here so that we can get some extra games to get some teams to warm up and we can satisfy some television contracts, I'm not going to look at them and say, I don't understand it. But if it were up to me, I would say 16 teams. Let's everybody be safe first.
All right. Well done. Wendy, it's great to see you. Have a great weekend, my man. A lot to follow. We will check in with you.
Thank you.
Early next week. Now we turn our attention to the NFL, where a very big decision is on the verge of getting made. We have all watched in awe as Patrick Mahomes led the Chiefs to one come-from-behind win after another on the way to winning last year's Super Bowl. And while he still has 2 years left on his deal, he has now begun discussions with the Chiefs to extend his contract. That's according to the Kansas City Star. Sam Ellinger tweeting about the situation, quote, "The most anticipated contract negotiation in NFL history is underway between the Chiefs and Patrick Mahomes. The result will be a deal unlike any other, with potential new precedents that could change future talks." Isn't that interesting? Let's get into it. Louis Riddick and Rob Ninkovich are with me here this morning. And Louis, I'll start with you as one who knows the other, you know, the inside of the room when it comes to these. When he says new precedents that could change future talks, what sort of thing might he be talking about?
Yeah, I'm sure that, you know, what Sam is referring to is the fact that, is there going to be some kind of new language in this contract as far as, does Patrick always have to be paid a certain percentage of the overall cap of the Kansas City Chiefs? Is there going to maybe be some kind of provisions in there where he has the ability to renegotiate his salary based upon what other quarterbacks get who come after him as far as their contract renegotiations? I mean, there's going to be a lot of discussion surrounding this contract until it actually gets done about just how creative the Chiefs are going to be able to be. But I can tell you this. They're locked in. I think this is something that's going to be methodical, that the Chiefs are going to handle slowly and be very careful about how they do this. But make no mistake about it. They know that the number is going to be big here. They know that the average per year is probably going to start. It's going to start at $40 million per year. They know that the guaranteed money at signing, guaranteed when he signs his contract, is going to start at $100 million and go up from there. He's going to blow away the very top of this market. It's just a matter of how much he's going to blow it away and whether or not it's going to be something where he absolutely exercises his leverage to the degree to which he could exercise it, which would absolutely destroy Kansas City's cap. Because make no mistake about this, in my estimation, he goes into this contract negotiation, although the Chiefs could play hardball, but they won't. But he goes into this contract negotiation having more leverage probably than any other player in the history of the league as far as what he could command from this football team relative to how important he is to this team and how important he is to the league. So you can best believe that the numbers are going to be astronomical. And the provisions in this contract and how creative they're going to be as far as making sure he stays at the very top of the league as far as his pay is concerned are going to be things that without a doubt will be groundbreaking, and the Kansas City Chiefs are prepared for that and they know that.
All right, that'll be interesting to watch for sure. But you mentioned the potential destruction of a team's salary cap. So, Lewis, this will be fun. Whenever you want to find out how much a quarterback is really worth, ask a linebacker. So here's Rob Ninkovich. Last week you told me, Rob, we were talking about Dak and we were talking about robbing Peter to pay Paul, and you seemed hesitant. Are you now willing to rob Peter to pay Patrick?
Yes, I am. I am willing to do that. Look, you back up the truck for this guy. You pay him as much as he wants. He's got 2 years left on his contract. Just in the last 2 years alone, think about the playoff revenue that they've made, the Chiefs, that is, and hat and T-shirt sales and Super Bowl championship memorabilia. I mean, think about all the money that Pat Mahomes has made the Kansas City Chiefs. So whatever that is, you write it down on a piece of paper. He's going to make 45 million. I mean, look, he's going to be the highest paid quarterback in the NFL because he deserves to be the highest paid quarterback in the NFL. He's a champion. He's proven himself. He's done it in the last couple of years better than anyone else has. So back up the truck, unload all that money because he deserves it. He's the champion and he's going to continue to be one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL. So with that 2-year contract still in place, you sign him to a 5-year contract that makes it a 7-year, spread out the guaranteed money over the length of the deal. There's going to be some provisions to where he's maybe always the highest paid quarterback based on his performance. I don't know, but he deserves it. He earned it. And look, they test drove the vehicle. They want to buy that car. They don't want to mess around.
That's one no one would disagree with. There are other sides of this conversation, though, and we will have them as the morning continues. But there's another quarterback I want to get to coming up next, because right now it appears to be all love, if you will, between Matt LaFleur and Aaron Rodgers in Green Bay. But I have a prediction. History tells us that's not going to last very long, and you'll hear why coming up next. Plus, he's 23 years old. He's the reigning MVP. But there's one big step Lamar Jackson needs to take next, and our linebacker will tell you what that is right after this. You're watching Get Up on ESPN.
Geico gets you access to licensed agents 24/7, which means that Geico is always there for you. If only everyone was always there for you. Like your mom, when you fill out really, really important paperwork on the first day of a new job.
Name, check. Birthday, social security, is that a thing? Hey, mom, what is my social security number? Mom? Okay, let's guess. 0017. Oh, Gemini. Hashtag done.
Geico, always there for you with savings and 24/7 access to licensed agents.
Foot odor throwing you off your game? Stick to a winning game plan with Odor Eaters, featuring 3 advanced odor and wetness fighters. The lineup provides long-lasting odor control plus more to keep your feet on their game.
Odor Eaters powder provides outstanding moisture control. Clear drying spray is the MVP in preventing athlete's foot, while insoles work continuously to manage wetness while adding a layer of comfort. Pick up today at Walmart, Target, CVS, Dollar General, or other fine retailers.
Odor Eaters. Destroy foot odor with the best in odor defense.
Get Up is brought to you by Corona Extra. Find your beach. All right, there remains a lot of speculation about the relationship between Aaron Rodgers and his coach, Matt LaFleur, ever since the team traded up to take Jordan Love in last month's draft. Well, yesterday, LaFleur downplayed any concerns about the nature of that relationship. Here's what he said.
We talk 4 times a week whenever we get those opportunities to meet in those individual meetings. And I feel really good about where we're at. You know, we both understand that this is a business. And when that whole thing went down, it was just one of those situations where there were a couple guys targeted that had just previously been picked. And Jordan was the next guy on the board. And so we went with the best player at the time.
All right, so Lewis and Rob with me today. So that's what he said. And Lewis, that's all fine. But here's what history says. This is the 3rd straight year that a team with a Super Bowl winning quarterback drafted another quarterback in the first round. In each of the previous 2 cases, that incumbent quarterback did not last 1 full season as the starter and was gone after the year. Now, they were Joe Flacco and Eli Manning. Obviously, Aaron Rodgers is playing at a different level. But still, you draft a guy in the first round to play him. So how do you expect this thing to play out?
Yeah, Green. I think, you know, I've said this numerous times. I think this plays out, you know, in accordance with just how fast Jordan Love comes along and what his developmental arc looks like. If it's one that is accelerated and he's ahead of schedule, then it's one where the conversation surrounding when do the Packers move Aaron and get as much as they can for Aaron becomes more, you know, of a current conversation. I think the slower it takes for Jordan Love to develop along with Aaron's current performance, then the slower this whole transition process will take. I think either way, though, you're looking at 2 years max left of Aaron Rodgers in Green Bay. And I think the 2022 season, both from a salary cap standpoint and from a logistical standpoint, makes sense for them to go ahead and then transition to Jordan Love. There's a reason why you move up to draft a quarterback in the first round. And look, and Aaron has already said, look, he doesn't blame Brian Gutekunst, the general manager, for taking the long-term approach as far as what's best for this football team. He doesn't blame him. I'm sure, obviously, he would have preferred that they would have communicated to him a little bit more about the fact that this could be a possibility in the first round in terms of them moving up for a player, but he gets it. But I think just from, you know, when you kind of remove emotion from it, I think 2 years, without a doubt, I think Green Bay will have someone else underneath center, unless Jordan fails miserably and Aaron is playing at such a high level. And then if that's the case, then you may be looking at some new people making the decisions in Green Bay anyway, which will cause a whole nother discussion. But I think 2 years, 2022 is what you're looking at. That's probably where Aaron Rodgers will be playing somewhere else.
All right, so let's consider those 2 years here, Rob Ninkovich. So you've got Rodgers, who's one of the great players of all time, and you've got a team that won 13 games a year ago. And I'm thinking about something Jeff Van Gundy said to me years ago. He said, the most important relationship on any team is between the head coach and the star player. Do you agree with that? And if so, how do you think that situation impacts this team?
I agree with that, but I would say this. The relationship between Rodgers and LaFleur has changed completely now. When you trade up for a first-round quarterback, it's like you're kind of friends with somebody, and then you get along in public and everything's gravy, but then you close the door behind you and you're like, God, man, that guy annoys me. So look, I think in front of the team that they have to be cordial. They have to get along. They have to talk four times a week. But I'm telling you, when you trade up to draft somebody's replacement, there's an automatic bad taste in your mouth. You know that they're trying to get rid of you and it's not fun. And I've been in a situation where they draft somebody in your position. They're drafting them to replace you, and then they ask you, like, hey, give him any tip you know. Help him out as much as you can. We know he's not going to be the starter right now, but you know in the back of your head as a player, okay, well, he's going to try and replace me next year or the year after that. So this is going to light a fire under Rodgers. He's going to be motivated. You saw that even after the draft. He had a little chip. He's going to have a bigger chip on his shoulder.
Rob.
So I think the relationship is going to have to be good for the team. If you're the best player on the team, you do what's best for the team, and you do not get along with your head coach and your quarterback in front of the whole team. That messes up the whole dynamic of the team.
Rob,
so
how did
there's
that
a
ever
respect
work?
Thing that's going to have
Let
to happen.
Let me ask you, Rob, how did that ever work with in your experience with Brady and Belichick? Because I think there was a perception that those two guys might not always have been on the same page, and yet they continued winning. What did you see from that?
All respect in front of the team. You always have to have that. So when you're in a team setting and you're in front of the group and you're in front of a room, everybody has to respect the head coach. It's all about respect. The second that that's not there, then you start to lose the team. And that's not going to happen with Bill Belichick. If there was any disagreements with anybody behind the scenes, it's going to be between that person and the head coach. And you're going to be able to talk it out. And it's going to be between you and the coach. Once you get in front of the team, that all has to go away, because there has to be a respect level for the head coach. And that has to resonate with everybody in the locker room.
And so, Lewis, I got 30 seconds. Whose responsibility is that in Green Bay? Is it on the quarterback or on the coach?
Your head coach has to maintain order within the locker room.
I'm sorry, that's for Lewis. Rob, go ahead, Lewis.
Yeah, I think as far as Green Bay is concerned, without a doubt, I think the mistake really Green Bay possibly could have made here is before the draft even comes up is to make sure that quarterbacks like this, quarterbacks of Aaron Rodgers' level of accomplishment, know that this could possibly happen. You have to look, you have to treat guys like this a little bit different considering what kind of importance he holds for your organization and what he has accomplished in the NFL. You can't spring this kind of thing on him. So I think they need to make sure that, without a doubt, front office and head coach make sure that this relationship stays positive, because they're the ones who are going to be there, at least they're hoping, long after Aaron Rodgers is gone. So you better make sure that you make good with this for as long as he is going to be there, because right now it's not off to a great start.
Right. And oh, by the way, they were 13-3 last year. They should be thinking about trying to win a championship this coming year. We'll take a short break. Much more as we go, including we will talk about Tom Brady. He had a great offseason. But another under-the-radar quarterback may have actually had the best offseason of anyone. We'll tell you who that is and why when we continue. And we also have a little sneaky Hembo time, and this one's for Graziano today. He's going to join us in a minute. Which quarterback had completed the most passes to DeAndre Hopkins through the 2016 season, meaning before Deshaun Watson got drafted? We'll talk about that and more in just a moment. You're watching Get Up on ESPN.
Though we're apart these days, we're sharing more. So, at GEICO, we'd like to say thanks. Thanks for sharing your savage dance moves. Thanks for sharing your DIY haircut fails. Thanks for sharing your inner lip sync star. Now, it's our turn to share with the GEICO Give Back, a 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies for current and new customers. Because we're committed for the long haul, the 15% credit lasts your full policy term. Visit geico.com/giveback for more info and eligibility.
We are back on Get Up, and we're going to talk about DeAndre Hopkins in just a moment, which brings us this morning's question from Sneaky Hambo, and it's for Graziano. Before the Texans drafted Deshaun Watson, meaning through the 2016 season, Dan, which quarterback had completed the most passes to D-Hop?
So it's through 2016.
Correct.
So I'm trying to remember where the Texans... So it's not Matt Schaub. I think that's too early. I'm thinking it's either Brian Hoyer or Ryan Fitzpatrick, who were the two guys that were there early in Hopkins' career. I'm going to guess it's Brian Hoyer.
Oh, by one, you are off. The answer is actually Brock Osweiler, who completed 66 passes to Hopkins. Hoyer completed 65 passes to Hopkins. Oh, Hambo loves it, but that's a valiant effort by Graziano.
That's a good
one. Stand by. We're coming back to you in a second, but first I want to talk about D-Hop because the Cardinals wide receiver has been among the most productive pass catchers in the league since he got there in 2013. He was on with Jalen and Jacoby yesterday, and he offered his thoughts on Michael Thomas giving himself the title of best receiver in the NFL.
I definitely think I'm the best. I know I'm the best. Mike, my boy, I love Mike. We was chasing yesterday, but he know if I had Drew Brees my whole career, what these numbers would be. Julio Jones know if I had Matt Ryan my whole career. That's my boy. I trained with Julio, too. He know what these numbers would be. So those guys are definitely blessed to be in a position where their whole career they had a Pro Bowl quarterback that they spent, you know, multiple seasons with. But I don't complain. I don't make excuses. I go out and work.
Now, listen, going back to before they drafted Deshaun Watson and the year that he was hurt, I was trying to tell anyone who would listen, I thought DeAndre Hopkins is the best receiver in football, and he didn't have the right circumstance in which to prove it. Lewis, just how dynamic a duo could he and Kyler Murray be in Arizona? That's what I meant when I said no quarterback had a better offseason than Murray did. How good could they be?
Well, they can be fantastic, Greeny. Look, I think what he gives them now is he gives them a true, legit outside lane XZ wide receiver, the kind of guy who in one-on-one coverage outside the numbers will be able to win down the field and be able to come up with those tough, contested, game-changing type plays over and over again. And that's really what they need. That's what Kyler needed. Look, Larry Fitzgerald is a surefire Hall of Famer, one of the greatest wide receivers ever to play the game. But he really is an inside player now that doesn't have that vertical stretch on the outside. They need somebody to go along with him. Christian Kirk is a guy who's a combination inside-outside player, but he's not someone who's as good as DeAndre Hopkins. Now when they have DeAndre and they add him to that, they got Kenyon Drake running the football, and with Kyler's ability to both beat you both in the pocket and outside the pocket as far as throwing on the move, changing launch points because of how athletic he is. It's really the perfect thing that they needed from a weaponry standpoint. But here's the thing that's going to make it all go. They better make sure that the offensive line is good to go, particularly at the offensive tackle positions, so Kyler is not running for his life. If they can do that, the offense is going to be dynamic. Fix the defense, and maybe they can go ahead and make some noise in the NFC West.
Rob Ninkovich, what do you expect from that combination in particular and from that team in general?
I think they're going to be explosive. I think that they're one of the best teams that have a chance to win their division next year with the things that they have done in the offseason. Look, Kyler Murray, he's going to be incredible in the second year. And his rookie season, I was impressed with his ability to get out of the pocket, to move, the speed that he has. I would say this, though. The one thing that Hopkins is going to have to realize is when he's playing with a quarterback that can move like this, if you play with a Drew Brees or a Matt Ryan or a Tom Brady, you run your route and you know, hey, I'm getting the ball in this play because this is exactly specifically set up for me to get the football. When you're playing with a quarterback that can scramble, get out of the pocket, there might be broken plays. There might be a play where you're going to run the route and look, it's not there. You got a block. So that is the only difference that he's going to have to realize moving with a quarterback that can move around, get out of the pocket, scramble, and throw. It's not going to be as simple as Drew Brees, I'm running my route, this is where I'm at. Michael Thomas, he's a great route runner. He's had a lot of production because he knows every time he's running a route, the ball's coming. So when you're playing with a mobile quarterback, that's not going to be the case. There's going to be broken plays where you just got to improvise and kind of play backyard football. Can that be explosive? Of course. We've seen it a bunch. But, you know, we'll see moving forward. I think the Arizona Cardinals have done a great job this offseason, and they're going to be one of the better teams of improvement from last year to this year, I think.
I'm thinking about Field Yates telling me that you could make an argument that the number four quarterback in fantasy this coming season could be Kyler Murray with all the things that he's going to wind up doing. We'll see. We'll talk about that more as we go. Meanwhile, let me get Graziano back in here because he had a whole column on quarterbacks on ESPN.com ranking the level of commitment every NFL team has to its quarterback. Let's run the hurry up. At the top of the story is Jared Goff. Dan, how's that contract looking?
It looks really good if you're Jared Goff. Greeny, you talk about quarterbacks that had good off seasons. As of March, Goff got a $21 million roster bonus. He got $27.5 million in next year's salary and bonus guaranteed fully. And he's got $15.5 million in 2022 money fully guaranteed. They are locked in on Jared Goff for at least three more years in Los Angeles.
We've been talking.
Moving down the list, we go to Aaron Rodgers, right? Now, he is. We've talked about him since Jordan Love was drafted. How could the Packers get out of this? How much longer would they have him? Looks like two more years, at least for Aaron Rodgers in Green Bay. It would be very, very financially onerous for them to move on from him after this year. Possible, but not likely, given the way the contract is written.
And then Ben?
And then Ben Roethlisberger in Pittsburgh. He did a restructure this offseason. He got a $19 million signing bonus for doing it. It helped the Pittsburgh Steelers on their cap. But if you look at Ben Roethlisberger's contract, to carry him for 2021, the Steelers would have to eat it would cost $41 million against their cap. Realistically, the Steelers either have to extend Roethlisberger again next offseason, or that's that. He's really only tied to them for one more year.
A lot of interesting quarterback questions out there about a lot of the veterans and others. Now let's talk about a guy about whom there is no question, and that is Lamar Jackson, because last year he became the youngest quarterback to win MVP on a team that won 14 games and broke the single-season rushing record. His head coach, John Harbaugh, was asked about how the team can take the next step on offense, giving their already explosive run game. And here's what Harbaugh has said. He said, quote, "The ability to make them pay for tilting their defense towards stopping our run game with a really efficient passing game. I do believe that's the next step of this offense. I really do believe Lamar is going to take the next step. We should have guys more open, and we should have bigger plays, and we should create more opportunities in the passing game because of that running game." And on this, Rob Ninkovich, I want to start with you here because you're making an interesting point in our meeting this morning about one thing that you see in Lamar Jackson you think he needs to do better immediately.
Yeah, he needs to have more awareness of taking less damage and less hits. You look at last year, he was hit 181 times. That's 40 more than the next quarterback. And watch this hit here on the sidelines. I mean, look, when you take these hits over and over and over again throughout the season, it's going to wear on you. It's going to affect your accuracy and having the ability to throw the football down the field. It only takes one wrong land on the shoulder, one jammed finger, just something that kind of messes up your ability to throw the ball down the field on your feet, shifting your hips, everything. So for him to take the next step, he has to understand, I can't get hit as much. I have to get down. I have to get out. I have to make sure I do not get hit 180 times in the season. That's not going to help you in the playoffs. So if he can get hit less, have more awareness with that, I think sky's the limit. He's going to be even better than he was last year, but he has to limit the damage during the regular season.
What do you think, Lewis? History says that's easy to say. It's an excellent point. But that frequently it's hard to coach that out of players who are accustomed to making such special things happen sometimes when nothing appears to be there.
Yeah, you know, I was fortunate enough to obviously spend a lot of Monday nights with Steve Young, and he talks about this very thing. The more comfortable you get being able to absolutely dissect people from the pocket, the less you rely on your pure athletic ability and take the kind of chances that Lamar is taking. And there's no question about this. Lamar cut people up from the pocket last year. He improved from year one to year two dramatically as far as his efficiency throwing the football in key situations. And I think as he continues to get better and better at that, and it's scary to think that he's going to take another huge jump this year like he did last year as far as improving in those situations, the more he does that, the less inclined he will be then to go ahead and try and make those spectacular plays and put himself in harm's way like Rob's talking about. And if he can do that, and he can really continue to be more efficient just throwing the football and not being touched by anyone and coming out of games clean, the Ravens are going to be a problem. And they added some weapons on the perimeter. Look, they got J.K. Dobbins this year, running back. They got Devin Duvernay from Texas, who's a 10-1, 10-flat, 100-meter guy to play in the slot. They have got speed and playmakers everywhere. So he doesn't necessarily have to do the things that he has done in the past, although he still can, which makes them all the more dangerous. And if he can play the long game, as far as just kind of taking care of his body, it's scary to think how good this young man's going to be. It really is.
Lewis, our FPI, our analytics, favor the Ravens in literally every game they play this season. In your mind, is Baltimore the best team in the NFL?
They're right up there, man. Look, to beat the champs, you got to beat the champs. And Kansas City's going to sit here and say, no matter what, look, we got 15, and 15 is all that matters for us right now. Well, that's not all that matters, but he's the great equalizer. But the Ravens, as far as 1 through 53, what they're going to put out there on the football field every Sunday, you better strap up and you better bring it when you play this football team, because they don't have a whole lot of weaknesses.
Rob, yes or no, Ravens the best team in the NFL going into the season?
You got to go with the championship Kansas City Chiefs, but look, they're right up there, number two. They're right up there, so I can't say that they're the best right now, because the best is Kansas City. So I'm going with Kansas City, but they're right up there.
Again, those teams will face each other on Monday Night Football, September 28th. The game is in Baltimore. Our analytics favor the Ravens. Meanwhile, we have a very busy day coming, the whole day here on ESPN. After we wrap up this morning at 10 o'clock in the morning, it's First Take, followed by SportsCenter, then NFL Live, The Jump. At 4 o'clock, it's UFC Live, previewing tomorrow night's Fight Night from Las Vegas. And then a two-hour Sports Center at 5 with the PTI guys along at 5:30. And cap it all off with SVP tonight. A full day on ESPN. Coming up, Patrick Mahomes has all the tools to be the GOAT. But what will it actually take for him to get there? Dominique Foxworth will join us to answer that question and more next.
GEICO knows there are many reasons why you ride. From the camaraderie of the other bikers, a band of brothers always there for you rain or shine, to the amazing savings you get with GEICO on your motorcycle insurance and accessories coverage all year round. But for Bucky Hornhill, it was one reason in particular.
It was my helmet hair. I was born with helmet hair. I've tried to cut it a bunch of times, even buzzing it, but it immediately just goes back to helmet hair.
GEICO Motorcycle. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more.
Question you're trying to ask.
You're better tomorrow.
I'm not answering that. That's a clown question, bro.
Next.
Mike, why are you in such a bad mood?
What do you care?
What else do you want to know?
Next question.
Your next question.
Next question.
Baby
next question. Next question.
I'm not going to answer any questions for you.
That's my question! The question, jerk!
Mike Ditka saying, what do you care, has unquestionably become my favorite part of that. And before I start asking the questions to Dominique, I'll just say it, because I know everyone's thinking it. We are dressed exactly alike. I mean, Nick, it's embarrassing the degree to which we look the same right now.
It's embarrassing for you because I wore it better. I mean, I'm killing it right now.
You get no argument out of me. I agree. Your hair is longer than usual. You look fabulous. My hair is longer than usual. I look like Mike Gundy. I mean, it's ridiculous. All right,
I'm 40.
Let's answer the questions. I'm a man, and I'm over 50, for crying out loud. My hair, like, I look like I should be Keith Partridge. All right, let's get to business here. Tom Brady, we've talked about a lot as the GOAT. Pretty much everyone acknowledges he is the GOAT of all quarterbacks. What does Patrick Mahomes have to do to be considered the greatest quarterback of all time?
Well, I think it's 3 Super Bowls. He's already kind of demonstrated that his best play is better than Tom Brady's. He hasn't sustained it for nearly as long as Tom Brady has. Now, understand, Tom's been to 9 and won 6, and that is fantastic. But several of those Super Bowls, I think a lot of people give more credit to the defense than they do to Tom Brady, more credit to Belichick than they do for Tom Brady. But Patrick Mahomes has been a revelation in this league. We've never seen anybody as good as he has been for back-to-back seasons early in his career. If he can put together a few more championships, and if they are as spectacular as last year's, I think if he could get the 3, people will start to talk about him. There'll be an argument. I'm sure some people will hold on to Brady like people are holding on to Jordan, but I think it'll be Patrick Mahomes will be considered the greatest quarterback and the greatest football player of all time. If he can keep up this level of play for a little bit longer and tag 2 more Super Bowls on there, I think that's what happens.
Okay, that's an interesting one, and that's an argument we'll definitely have when we get there. Meantime, next question. Which NFL coach is under the most pressure this season, Neek?
Man, it's a lot of coaches out there under a lot of pressure. I think we're looking at
the Cowboys and Mike McCarthy have a tough situation. And I said yesterday that Mike Nolan, the defensive coordinator, is probably under the most pressure within that building because the defense was the problem. But he is under a lot of pressure because we all thought that they were going to be deep in the playoffs last year. And the only problem, the only thing that kept them out of a deep playoff run, it was surmised that it was the coach, Jason Garrett. Now the coach is gone. And everyone knows the type of quarterback Dak Prescott is. And now they bring in Mike McCarthy. If he can't get them into the playoffs or at least get them playing consistently, I think he's going to be in trouble. And they may not move on yet, but the rumors will be abound that Jerry Jones will be looking for somebody else that can get them over that hump.
All right, that's Mike McCarthy's new team. Let's talk about his old one. Who will be the starting quarterback in Green Bay week one of next season?
I want to be exciting, and I want to say Jordan Love. But I don't think that's the case because of all the economic reasons that we all have been talking about for a few weeks. I think Aaron Rodgers obviously is on the downslope of his career. I think everyone understands that, but he is still playing at a high enough level. His counting stats from last year are super impressive. He protects the ball. They need to make more plays down the field. The defense was kind of opportunistic in turnovers, but not all that consistent. If the defense can continue to play well, or excuse me, start to play better, Aaron Rodgers can continue to make big plays in big moments. I think he'll hold on to his job because the cap ramifications are ugly if they try to move on from him anytime before 3 years from now.
All right, I knew there'd be one that we would agree upon. Dominique, stay close by. He's doing First Take later today, and we'll bring him back for some more conversation here a little later. Meanwhile, for the college game, because there are still no set plans on the start of the college football season, though some players will be starting to return to campus early next month. I want you to hear yesterday, Georgia coach Kirby Smart talking about dealing with the financial pressure to return. Listen to this.
The worst thing we can do as coaches or as administrators is to feel like we have to do this in order to survive financially and make a decision that is costly to some, even one student athlete. And I know that from the Georgia perspective, every decision we're making on the return to sport is the safety and health and well-being.
You know what? As we bring Lauren Paul into this conversation, good for him. And here we have been talking nonstop about the devastating impact that not having a season would have on all of these universities and how imperative it is that these players go out there and play. And Laura, here's a coach about as high profile as it gets saying we should stop talking about that. I for one, give him a lot of credit for saying that.
Yeah, and you know what, Greeny? He's actually maintained that this whole time. Kirby Smart, even when I spoke to him, I know Paul has too, about a month ago, he was saying that the health and safety of the student-athletes should be the only thing we're concerned about. He was one of those initially saying that if it's not safe for fans to be in the stands, then why should it be safe for our players to be able to play on the field? And so I think that's key in all of this. And as all these coaches start trying to look at what the options are here, they're trying to weigh, you know, the health and safety of their players and also the long-term viability of football and other sports at their universities. And so it's a complicated thing to weigh, but it's actually not that complicated because we're talking about real people here. One thing before we get Paul involved here that I think is important is that there wasn't any sort of implementation of exactly what needed to happen at each university for welcoming their students back, student athletes back when it comes to testing. But Georgia is one university that's decided to give both coronavirus tests and antibody tests just because Kirby Smart and other administrators there felt like it was important to provide the antibody test as well.
Yeah, I think it is. It's obviously expensive, and that also factors into this somewhere along the line. Paul, what do you think?
It's extraordinary, and he's not the only one. And in fact, Greeny, I talked to Will Muschamp yesterday, and I know we talked to him here a couple of weeks ago, and he made a very distinct point. He said, we're bringing our assistant coaches in now. The offense comes in the morning, the defense in the afternoon. They wear masks. And when we get the players in, we're going to disinfect. And I asked him, I said, is everyone going to be wearing a mask? He said, yes. And I think more coaches need to make this statement. We talked about Nick Saban the other day. We heard from Will yesterday and Kirby as well, but there are just too many people that laugh at this, especially in various regions of the country. And I'm less concerned about the football players and I'm less concerned about the coaches than I am about the fans disregarding all the guidelines we're getting from everyone else.
All right. That's well said. I want to show you guys something else that happened yesterday because, Laura, here's a question that we've raised a few times and maybe at least in one spot we found an answer. It comes from a tweet from our college football reporter, Adam Rittenberg, who was quoting the athletic director at Iowa and saying, quote, any athlete who chooses not to train or compete this year because of COVID-19 concerns faces no penalty with their status or scholarship. He acknowledges until there's a vaccine Everyone faces some level of risk. Now, boy, that opens up a very interesting line of, again, first and foremost, we applaud it, right? Because you can't make these kids go back and do something right. if they don't feel safe doing it. But at the same time, if a whole bunch of people feel that way, Laura, it gets very complicated. So where does that go?
Yeah, what Gary Barta said to Adam Rittenberg is monumental, I think, in all of this. And when we look back at the way that this has played out and the way that it will continue to play out, there's so much unknown. But this is a moment where I think a lot of people are going to have to pay attention. Now that somebody, an administrator, a decision maker, has come out and said, we're going to honor these scholarships no matter what happens, basically, there's really not an option for other people to go and say, well, we're not going to. I mean, it just makes people look bad. And it's more important than that because that is the right thing to do. And so once someone has come out and said that, and this is really, by my knowledge, the first time that someone has publicly said something like this as it relates to the scholarships, I think that it provides an opportunity for everyone to hopefully keep their scholarships. And that is really key here when we talk about the risk that so many may be taking and just the uncertainty here. It's a question that so many student athletes have even asked to me, and I have not had the answers. I think this is a moment that really is monumental in all of it.
Paul, how about you?
Yeah, I mean, Greeny, you know me. I'm the cynical one. I'm the kid in third grade who threw the spitball at the teacher and then pointed at Laura as the culprit. But what Gary said there is very true, and it has to be said. And not only does it have to be said, it has to be enacted. Most responsible people will follow this, but there'll be a bonehead coach somewhere who disregards all reality and will throw some poor guy off the team because he didn't feel comfortable showing up, and the media will lapse into that. Now, I hope more will follow suit, but I'm not as confident as the group of us are right now. As intelligent a statement it is, I think there's some idiots in college football who will make mistakes that will undo what Gary said yesterday.
Yeah, I'm on the cynical side of this stuff as well. And so that, you know, Laura, I don't know that old people understand who are watching that these scholarships are not guaranteed to these kids. They can be revoked for any number of reasons. Yeah. And so I think we all have to remain vigilant to make sure this, Laura, is not one of those reasons.
Absolutely. And I think it's something that all of us will at least try our best to keep putting out there as, you know, right and wrong here. And look, I mean, as so much of this still remains to be figured out, guys, there have been a lot of ADs, even some presidents that I've spoken to. Paul, I'm sure you've had some of these same conversations that have said, we really will try to do everything that we can to honor these scholarships no matter what. But they're going to have to really stick with that. And I haven't heard anything super concrete until this Iowa AD spoke out.
And again, so two statements today from college football, and we applaud them both. Laura's got First Take later today. Paul's got his radio show. Great to see you both, guys. Thank you very much. Meanwhile, as we continue, just how important is Zion Williamson to the NBA's plan to return? We're just hours away from an enormous meeting. We'll talk about it with Jalen and Jay and Jeff Van Gundy in the next hour. Stay with us. Get up on ESPN.